you all will include a warm welcome for Mr. Gary Stroup this morning.
Thanks, DeWitt. Glad to be with you guys this morning. I've never been over here. I see you guys. I'm on staff here, obviously, and I see you guys traipsing across the coffee shop and a big sea of you, and so I'm really privileged to be with you. What my resume, it was not really a resume, but what my bio doesn't say is I lived in I grew up here in Dallas, but I lived in South Florida for 12 years. And for a brief season, I was a chaplain to the Miami Dolphins and got to be friends with Don Shula. My favorite Don Shula story is that Don is really popular in South Florida. He's like Landry was here. He's a legend. And couldn't go anywhere and have any privacy. So he took off for vacation and goes to a little small town in Maine where nobody knew him. And he's out with his wife, Dorothy. They go into this little tiny restaurant and get a meal. And they go into this little bitty tiny theater in this little town in Maine. And they slip in to see a movie. And as he walks in, everybody stands up and starts clapping, and he sits down. And he says, "I can't go anywhere where people don't know me." And a farmer sitting beside him said, "I don't know who you are, buddy, but they said they weren't starting the film until we got one more person." So life's a matter of perspective. I don't assume. I was thinking about you guys this morning, what I would share with you, and I want you to know that I don't assume everybody here who's in a job search is massively depressed or suicidal. That may be the truth. I know that change as itself is challenging. Even good change is challenging. I remember moving from Miami back to Dallas and excited about the opportunity to come back here, and even though it was an exciting move, change just brings about its own unique stresses, and so you guys are in the midst of challenging stresses. That's all there is to it. There's nothing you can do about that other than to deal with it appropriately. So I want you to know, as I talk about change and how change affects us a little bit this morning, I want you to know that I don't assume that everybody here this morning's spending your mornings out underneath a tree trying to contemplate life. I want you to know that. I know that's a part of everyone's in a different place at different days as they look into the job market and they go through this change challenge. But I do want to speak to kind of both ends of the spectrum. Those of you who are kind of on your A game and you're being positive and you're in this job market, and those of you who may go through tougher days. It would be less than honest to say that looking for a job is the most you didn't wake up this year and go, you know, I hope the job market falls apart and I'm out looking for a job. And it just brings its own unique set of things. So I want to make a couple of observations this morning, and I hope that something I say today maybe will speak to something that's a part of your journey. Change is challenging. And I think the first thing that I thought of this morning is remember that you're not on this journey by yourself. And what I mean by that is not that you're not alone, but those who are in your life are on this journey with you as well. And I mean spouses and friends and kids. And why I say that is I think the emotional part of this, the human side of it, you know, you get lots of input on resumes and interviews and networking and all the normal kind of things with job. But I think the more challenging piece of that is the human side of it. And what I mean by that is you're on a journey with people who are in your life, and they're on this with you. And just like unemployment was surprising or maybe not surprising, but it was not necessarily the expected thing in your life this year, it wasn't for them either. And to remember that they're on that journey with you, and I think sometimes what happens is it can be a time that takes couples apart and friendships apart and relationships apart when it doesn't mean to. It was never the desire for it. Although looking for jobs is a natural part of the culture we live in. You know that, and I know that. But when you go through it, it's not a part of the culture, and it's not a statistic. It's you. And it's the same way for those who live with you and who are part of your life, and to remember that they're a part of that journey as well. And so some of the things that you can do to make that journey a time that doesn't draw you apart but speaks into your heart, into their heart, and draws you closer together is just to acknowledge the fact they're in this with you and include them. One of the very first things you ought to do is to realize that information is helpful. And so you have information because you know who you've applied with, you know your game strategy, you know your networking, you know everything you're doing. But if you don't give them that one little piece of information, you increase the possibility of fear, and fear is never our friend. Fear brings about all sorts of bad behaviors in all of us. So the other part of it is if you have a spouse and they're a part of your world, or deep friendships for that matter, and your kids, just a little bit of information goes a long way. But you also communicating to them what you need in that process. And here's what I mean by that. If you go home and your husband and wife goes, "So how did it go today? Who did you talk to? Blah, 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 blah. How'd the interview go?" You know, it's just like, stop, you know? And if you're like me, I'm pretty selfish, pretty rebellious. I'll end up snapping or being short with that person or shutting down emotionally. And to manage my emotions, I go inward. And so the person who I love the most is on the outside of that inwardness. And that's not helpful. And so one of the very first things that you can do is to communicate how you're going to communicate. To say, hey, you know what? We're going to get through this time together, and I'm excited what God has for us. I'm excited about my future. I'm excited about opportunities. I believe that, you know, eventually what I know from those who have been around me, if I'm consistent and I work through this, I will find the place of employment that's going to be best for to resource our family. But I want you to know that although I want to include you, it's just going to help me if that every time I come in the door, we're not talking about employment all the time. I want to talk about the kids. I want to talk about your day. I want us to talk about what was fun for you when you met with your friend or whatever. And I don't want our whole world right now to be this unemployment and this employment search. So, but I do know that because we're in this together, I need to communicate well with you. And so I want you to know that every single day, we're going to stop and I'll bring you up to speed. If you've got any questions, we'll do that. But I don't want every conversation to be about that because it'll discourage me, and I don't need discouragement right now. But at the same time, you need information. So let's talk about how that information. And so what you're doing is you're setting that up for the future. You're saying, I am going to communicate with you. Now, if you have some bad patterns, and if you're human, you may. For me, and for a lot of years, I would say, I'm going to get back to you. And that was just another way of saying, I'm not going to get back to you. So you need to realize they're on the journey with you. You need to bring them along. And it can be, I have a lot of friends who are in this process right now, and I've been through it myself. I have an adult son right now who's in this process. And, you know, what I do know is that there are couples that go through this, and they are actually drawn closer together. And there are couples that go through this, and at the end of it, there's carnage. And how you deal with it is everything. So I want you to know that as you go through this, you have a great responsibility and privilege to bring those who you've made a life commitment to, your spouses, with you, to bring your kids with you. It can be a real disruptive for children because they don't understand the whole thing that you're going through. All they know is there's this cloud in the house. And I think you ought to communicate with them. Sit down with them and say, hey, here's what's going on with Dad or with Mom, and I'm looking for a job, and here's what I'm doing to do that. And from time to time, I'll bring you updates. And if you ever have any questions, but you realize this is normal in our society, that people change jobs and they lose jobs, industry changes, blah, 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 blah. And just sit down with them. Ask them if they have any questions. But especially if they hear Mom and Dad bickering in the other room, and usually the bickering is not so much about the information you share, but how it gets shared. It's the delivery method, because you're fatigued at times and you keep your guard up and you try to be positive and you try to do all the right things, and you go home and you lower your guard down for that moment, and you hurt the person you probably least want to affect. We're sloppiest with those we know we can get away with it with. And so I loved Anne Bancroft, who was married to Mel Brooks. My favorite, I read Mel Brooks' biography. I don't know why I did that. But they interviewed Anne Bancroft, and she said, every day when I heard his key hit the lock, I knew the party was about to begin. I thought, man, can my wife say that about me? No. She said, you know, here comes Eeyore through the door. You know, I've been up all day long. You know, hey, how you doing? You know, I've been doing my PR routine, song and dance. I walk through the door, and all of a sudden, I save the worst for the last. Rather than coming up, and so a lot of times I've remembered that little adage, and I've that story about Anne Bancroft, and on the way home, I begin to say, hey, the person I love the most is sitting in my house. I need to bring my best for her. And I want to go ahead and put that on your map, that you're not on this journey. And I know you know that, but in a practical sense, the people at your house need information more than anything. That's all they need. And it does get old because you don't want to kind of recalculate the entire. I understand that, to go through the entire day. What did he say? Do you think there's a chance? Did you talk to so-and-so? I ran into Bill at the supermarket. His wife said, you know, they're da-da-da. And you just go, stop, you know. And at times you do need to let the person know what you need as well, to say, hey, here's what will help me the best. I also like to have that conversation during peace times, not during conflict. In other words, have the conversation about how you're going to communicate, not right after you've been a horse's rear end. And they said, here's how we're going to communicate. Yeah, so you just go over there by yourself. Yeah, I know. I've already seen how you're going to communicate. That's pretty obvious. So, you know, the old joke that you've heard 100 times, if someone tells you you're acting like a horse's rear end, you think about it. If 2 people tell you you're a horse's rear end, you really think about it. If 3 people tell you, you might want to buy a saddle. Listen to those people in your life. If they say you're being short, don't be defensive, saying, look, everybody in my life says I'm being short. I probably ought to look at that. But remember, there are people on your journey. Just take a few moments today and say, hey, I wonder how they're doing. I wonder how I can serve them. I wonder how I can include them. But if the spouse that you're living with is fearful, the way you heal fear is with information. That's the best way you can do it, is to step in and to say, hey, let me give you as much information. And if you have questions, always feel free to talk to me and ask me those things. Hey, here's how I'd like to do it. I want you to know that when I first come in at the end of the day, I want to give you a little update what's going on so you can be included. But I want us to be able to watch a TV show and not talk about career during every commercial, you know. And that's just good communications, all it is. And it's considerate and all that. If fear is high, they break the rules. Just know that. And be prepared to forgive them, but say, hey, let me give that information. Let me remind you. Feel free to ask me questions, but I don't want our whole lives to be about this career search right now. I'm giving a lot of energy to it, but I want us to go to a picnic in the park. Don't forget to live while you're in a job search. Don't make time for joy. Make time to date your spouse, to go and do things with them. Make time to spend time with your kids. In other words, the most important things in your life still need to be the most important things in your life. And this can be so dominating in your world right now. If you're not careful, it squeezes out what's really important. I truly believe you can be really aggressive in finding a job and still be a good dad, be a good mom. I still believe you can be in a job search and be kind and gracious to those you live with. I believe you can be in a career search and still have a great love life and recreation life with your spouse. But you've got to make it a priority, just like you do normally. But because this becomes such a large goal for you right now, if you're not careful, it will squeeze out of your relationships the very thing that's the most important to you. I would hate for you to get a job but lose your marriage. That would be a tragedy. I can always find a job eventually, but to repair that is tough. So I just want to put a big flag there because we see it often. Tell people what you need. Tell them how you're going to communicate. Let them give you feedback. Listen to them. They may need something I haven't put on the list this morning, and you'll get that. The other thing I want to bring up this morning is a concept that is really it's important throughout our lives, but it's the sense of entitlement that comes from being in a big endeavor. Like DeWitt said this morning, a big part of my life has been in the arts. And I remember when I was in school and my wife and I were just married, and if I was in a show or directing a show, everything stopped in our world. And my wife came to me early on. She said, you know, I love that you're in the arts, but I hate that you're in the arts. I said, why is that? She said, because everything gravitates around you. It's when you're in rehearsal, what you're doing, blah, 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 blah. Interestingly enough, I plugged my gifts into the church here and have for the last 6 years here and almost all my career within the local church. And my wife early on, after I went to church, she said the exact same thing. Everything gravitates around you. And so because I had a big thing, I felt entitled. So everyone needs to give me more grace, more rest, more time, because I'm in the middle of this big thing. You know, I got this show going on. And so I got this a few hours, and so don't bother me with dishwashers and kids who need, you know, homework. This is a time where you probably ought to do the homework and I probably ought to read the paper, blah, blah, blah. And see, when I describe it, I sound selfish. But when you do it, it probably feels normal to you. And same way, when I was doing it, it felt right to me. And so if you're not careful, you can use this period to feel entitled. Because I'm in the middle of a real challenge right now. I have the right to be short. I hear this all the time out in, the reason I was short, or the reason, I'm sorry, but you need to realize that I just went through this. And the I'm sorry didn't even hit the target. Because what you just said was, I'm sorry, but here's the reason why I acted like a horse's rear end. And you can feel entitled to be less giving and less caring and less connected to those in your life if you're not careful. It's really a cousin of the first thing. Remember who's on the journey. It's also a time where you can feel entitled to make really stupid decisions, to be really selfish. And it's really a counterintuitive decision when you think about it. For example, this could be the time that you use alcohol as a coping mechanism more than you would normally do so. And it's a dumb decision because it's not really, you feel like you're being self-loving by doing that. I'm going to take care of me a little bit. I'm going to kind of check out. I'm going to go and get, instead of having a drink, I'm going to have about four or five because I'm going through a challenge right now. And it's crazy because really what it is, it's self-destructive behavior. So you feel entitled to do that because you're going through a challenge, but what you're really doing is you're hurting yourself. To build up walls with the persons who love you the most is a self-destructive behavior. Rather than including them and loving them and staying really connected, our hearts begin to isolate and we start becoming internal and we stop feeling, because that's the way we cope sometimes. Now, some of you are thinking, dude, this is hardcore. I'm depressed now. He's talking about all this. I want to make sure that if there's anybody in this room that is tempted like I am to feel entitled, to be selfish, to self-medicate, to check out. All I'm going to do is this job search, and then I'm going to plug myself into a TV, take an Ambien, and go to bed. You know, and really, the entitlement piece will get you into trouble. I think one of the best things I can say to any of us that go through challenging times is to say, stay in the normal lane of life. Exercise, love, have friends, go on walks, have picnics, love those that are in your life, but stay in the lane of life. If you start pulling out of the lane of life, you feel like if you pull away and you take care of you, you're going to feel better. I give you my example of that is I always get so excited about vacation, and I always come back and I'm just whipped. and sometimes on my day off, I get headaches because I'm used to the rush of just pushing all the time. And what I really, it doesn't matter whether I'm in Colorado on vacation or I'm here working, I'm still the same person. And what really makes my life healthy is the healthy life I live on vacation and not on vacation. That my relationships are good, that I'm keeping short accounts, that I'm loving those in my life, that I'm taking care of my heart, that I'm living in a way that is beneficial. My wife has a scripture from the Bible in our laundry room, and it says, a kind word turns away much wrath. And I think she has it in there for me, not for her. but it's so true. You know, when I'm tired and when I feel challenged, I always drive under bridges, and it always says, this bridge is rated for like 2 tons. I don't even know the weight, but it always has a number. We don't know that it can hold 2 tons until 2 tons drives across it. You know what I'm saying? And every once in a while, you know, I kind of think, hey, I'm a 2-ton guy, and I get a little fatigued, a little hungry, a little challenged, and I find out I'm not a 2-ton guy. I'm a 1-ton guy. And so to make sure that I don't weaken how God has made me, great choices are really important. One of those is not to feel entitled. And it is a choice. A choice I make is to speak kindly to those in my life. That seems like such a dumb thing. It's like that's like a kindergarten. Hey, let's be nice to each other. Remember, play nice. But even just making the choice sets me up to begin to have other... When you're... I tell you, I didn't plan on saying this morning, but I'll get ready to go speak somewhere. And Kimberly, my wife, and I will always laugh about this. I'll get ready to go speak. And never fails on the way to the airports when I have a fight with her. And I just go, I said, you know what a beatdown it is to go and go somewhere else and to speak into other people's lives about how to have great lives when you and I have had this conversation. I said, this is a whip. I said, there's nothing that messes with my mind or my spirit more than to be sideways with you. And I mean, we'll sit out in the parking lot and get it worked out because it's that important. And so, if you struggled before and you struggled in your relationships before this came, it sets you up to be a 1-ton guy or gal. So what I'm telling you is, you can work on your marriage during the middle of this. Don't say, hey, we'll get through this, and then later on I'll deal with that. No. Stay in the lane of life and do the things you would normally do. Be aggressive in keeping short accounts and serving those that are in your life, just like you should do. And be honest with you, some of us are more selfish than others. Some of us think of ourselves too much, and we need to think about those in our lives. You can do with that what you want to. And then the fourth thing I want to say this morning is to embrace the adventure. And I'm not a... I like Zig Ziglar and all the positive motivation guys. I'm not one of those guys. I'm a little bit cynical by nature. I kind of walk through life with one eyebrow cocked, thinking everyone's kind of lying and I'll figure it out later. I'm not one of those guys. I can't embrace the adventure unless there's really adventure there. What I would say to you, for about 4 years, I worked at a private children's home at the beginning of my career. And I worked with a lot of single moms. And then after that, for a period of time, I worked with young adults and a lot of single folks. And I did a lot of counseling. And people would come in and say to me, hey, I'm going through the most difficult time of my life. And they would just share whatever it is. And there's this weird thing when somebody comes in and, man, the wills, you know, there's a divorce or whatever. There's a part of me that envies them. I don't want to go through a divorce, trust me on this. But I sort of envy them because I know that they have the possibility of having this incredible opportunity to be in a real connected relationship with God. And there's this intimacy that happens when you are pressed. And I'll tell you the reason why. It's not because God shows up more when you're going through a bad time than a good time, but I do know this. I look for him and listen to him like I never look and listen for him. If I go back and kind of chart, hey, when has God seemed the most real to you? It hasn't been on the mountaintop when, you know, I'm kind of skating and this has been published and blah, 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 all these kind of, you know, the things that I could have put on my resume that are kind of my fluff things this morning. You know, my nice guy statements are, I'm such a great guy and I'm so successful stuff. It's been when... the bottom's dropped out. And I'm wondering, man, am I going to make it through this day? You know, that's when I knew God was there. And I envy them because they're just so pressed at that point. And some of you may feel that way right now. You may feel like, man, this is a beatdown. I am so challenged to, you know, stay in this game, stay positive, blah, blah, blah. And so I would say embrace the adventure of it to realize that this is different. And adventure really is doing something you don't normally do, and there's a mild amount of risk involved. Okay, I'm not worried about any of you falling off a mountain to look for a job search unless you apply at a bad location in Colorado. My wife doesn't book hotels. and it kind of drives me nuts. You know, if I get a week off, I want to make sure everything happens exactly like I want it. And I've got this big sort of anal retentive thing. I want every moment to be like a joy-filled, and this day we're going to do this. And she totally drives me wacky because she goes, I don't want to do that. I said, what do you mean? She says, well, we know we're going to go to Colorado. That's enough. What happens if we get to Dumas in the middle of the night and there's no hotel? She says, well, that would be, we'll figure it out. She has zero need for structure, and I have nothing but structure needs. I mean, my need for control is like off the charts. And so she's an adventure gal. I'm adventuresome, but not like she is. I create the adventure, and I want to manage it. I want everybody to show up and do what I want them to do when I want them to do it, and I want it to all revolve around me. And she goes, no, you know, what happens if we, you know, go by there and, you know, there's a weenie roast in the presence here and he invites us? I go, that's not going to happen. What's ahead of us is good, and at times it's miserable, but it's part of the adventure. And I, you know, our greatest family stories, my kids sit around and tell stories about when I was uptight and wanted to manage something that didn't turn out too well. You know, how I planned everything so perfectly, and then we got rained on because we could have gone here, but Dad had to go here because he could understand it. And we have all these family history stories that are part of our heritage now. But they weren't all fun when we were there, you know. But embrace the adventure. I mean, don't expect it to go smoothly. I mean, you're doing some off-roading these days, and there's bumping with that. My wife got parents got a Jeep when we were in college, we were dating, and she thought it would be really great if we went behind a big movie theater in our little college town and knocked it into four-wheel drive and just drove across this big field. And I go, well, I've never driven four-wheel drive before. So she said, well, here's how my dad said to lock the wheels. By the way, you can just see problems everywhere. Dad's car, da-da-da. So anyway, we go across this field, and her sister was taking cake decorating, and she'd made this cake that we were delivering to a friend. The short story is we go into it's all grass like this, but you don't see there's a ravine. We go in the ravine. My wife goes airborne and lands in the cake. So we had to call her dad and tell him that the truck was stopped in a ditch, and but this is a part of our heritage. It makes a great story now, and that's where I got the name from her dad, Pinhead. I think part of the adventure is learning what we're not good at, and you guys have talked about this, and there's always a grieving process in that. And I don't want to overstate it, but there's a grieving process. We kind of go into life, and when we're kids or we're in college, we think, I know what I want to do. I want to be the CEO of IBM, you know? And nobody, in all of our dreams, you know, it's sort of like, I always like these shows where everybody, they do the reincarnation thing, I'm reincarnated. Nobody was ever a janitor in Rome. They were always emperors. You ever notice that? We have visions of grandeur all the time. And so one of the things that we go through is that we grieve. But I love that process because if I can eliminate what I'm not good at, I can get on with what I am passionate about. Trust me, when you're in college and you're talking to career counselors, nobody says, you know, you ought to go into theater. A lot of people are making money there. My parents, you know, every time I went home and said, hey, I'm a theater major. They say, well, what other classes are you taking? And then, you know, hey, you know what? When you get a degree is a degree. When you get finished, you know, people that are good at theater are good at sales. You know, and so all that kind of stuff. And all I can tell you is I do think there is none of us get to do 100% of what we're good at. Let's just go ahead and admit that. One of my communications with my son is to say, hey, when do you need me? What do you need from me? He says, I just want to come and tell you what's going on with me without you giving me advice. I said, great. And when he does ask me for advice, I tell him, I said, hey, here's what I will tell you is that no job is perfect for you. It's just not. Because jobs are not meant to complete us. They're meant to provide income. They're just not. If your job is what completes you, you're already in a losing battle. Okay, I have a great job. I have one of the plum positions in the entire country. I feel like I'm the most blessed guy on the planet. But my life does not come from my job. I love my job, but I still work, and I work with human beings. And even though they're good guys and gals, they mess up, and we have to forgive each other on a regular basis. And I have a real wife who lives with a real person. And I always think, we sometimes think if I change jobs, change spouses, the world's going to get better. And that's just not the truth. You know, the one thing I do control is me. So embrace the adventure. Learn what you're not good at. Grieve over it and move on. Also, there's also scripts we have that says we're not good at stuff that we may be really good at. You know, I'm the last of three brothers, and the first one was supposed to be studious. The second was supposed to be an entrepreneur, and I was supposed to be a clown. I mean, that's not what everybody said. That'd be cruel. But that was our script for our family. And I realized that somewhere in my early adulthood, my first job, I realized I've got some skills that are pretty organizational. But because I'm funny, I gave into that script really often. So this is a time of adventure for you to learn what you're great at and what you're not. And you may be surprised what you discover about, but let some things go. I told my son Murphy, I said, "Hey, dude, a job's a job." But I said, "But don't set yourself up for failure." You've probably heard it here before because it's a watermark expression. It's like who you are and be who you are. I do a lot of job interviewing for the church, and we have guys that come in, and I'll give you my little tip about interviewing. Remember, you're not interviewing with an HR director or department head. You're interviewing with a human. I'll give you another little insight tip. I love it when they ask me questions. And so, you know, it's funny. It's kind of embarrassing, but I'll walk out and say, "That was a great interview." And usually what makes it a great interview is we just talked a lot and connected. They don't try to impress me. I may be different than some guys, but the person who comes together in the real package and they've got the portfolio. Any tips you gave, you listen to them or don't listen to them. But all that stuff never wows me. Like, wow, it's on a different letterhead. Marge, let's get in here and let's get some more data on this person. What wows me is when the person comes in and we make a human connection. And so people will tell you, be sure you look them in the eyes. That's true, but what they're really saying is fake that you're comfortable with yourself. Be comfortable with yourself. Don't be afraid to not be good at something. And don't knock yourself down. Nobody's great at everything they do. You don't have to say, you know, I stink at that. You say, that's not my strongest area. But I tell you what I really do love. But the great interviews I have is when I have to finally interrupt them because they've said, "Hey, enough about me. Let me tell me about you." And they'll say, "Tell me about you. Tell me about what you love about the church. What brought you here, Gary?" And, you know, an hour and a half later, we finally switch over to them. And it's really weird. It's a little bit embarrassing to tell you that. But people like talking about themselves. They just do. And if they're passionate about their job, and they're in control of the interview anyway, but like who you are. And if you don't like who you are, find out why you don't like who you are. And don't waste this time. Get into it. Figure out what it is about you and stop grieving about it and do something about it. There's some things about me I don't like, and when I get sick and tired of them, I'll draw a line in the sand and do something about them. I won't go into that because there's enough time, but this is cheaper than therapy, trust me. last thing I want to tell you one little story and kind of wrap this up, just keep you guys on schedule. I've got two sons, and I took my oldest, I took them both to Disney World when we were moving to Florida. I thought, this would be fun. And for the first time, we lived next to Disney World. I took them, and Griffin at that time was a little bitty guy, and I don't remember the exact age. But Pluto, he called Fluto, and he kept saying, "We're going to see Fluto," and he was so excited he couldn't sleep. And at the little motel the night before, he's like, "It's tomorrow, Fluto Day." Yeah, it is. So we took him to the amusement park, and just, you know, all the way there, you know, we're on the tram, we're going to see Fluto today. So, yeah, we are. And so it was like the every parent's dream, you know. We walked into the park, and sure enough, you could see him coming across the bridge there at Disney, you know, and he's coming. And I don't know whether you've ever been there or not, but the characters are like 18 feet tall. They're huge. There's a human in there, and I think the head is above all the human part. It's just massive. And sure enough, you know, he's coming across the bridge. I said, I couldn't have paid this guy to do this any better. So he comes, you know, doing his little character thing, coming across the bridge. And as he got closer and closer, Griff just, it was overwhelming. He started backing up. There wasn't enough grounds for him. And finally, he was against a fence next to a building. He goes, I said, there he is, Griff. It's Pluto. He goes, Dad, I like him better over there. I don't think you're surprised that I don't get paid to tell you that I love God. I just don't. I do that because I love God. I'm a screwed up, messed up dude. I make mistakes. I'm imperfect. But for a lot of years of my life, the God I grew up with, hearing about, was a God that I liked him better over there. You know, I wanted to say, hey, God, if you're up there, be in this interview. God, if you're up there, you know, make algebra make sense before I flunk this class again. And so I like God over there. And what I realized is I had everybody else's words. I had the crazy people on TV. I had the messed up church that was legalistic and condemning. And if my view of God is that God's a rule keeper, I'm not signing up for that field trip because I'm a rule breaker, you know? And what I realized is that God really cared about me. But I had to let him get close enough. And so one of the things I want to encourage is that don't waste this period in your life. I'm in this because to be intimate with him, to walk with him, and to call out to him. And you may have an image of God. You may have questions about God. Most of the people I talk to who have questions about God have never really seriously sat down. They just have the dorm room questions I had in college that are kind of well-formed, and there's not really an interaction. But I want to tell you that as God gets closer, you may discover him. He's not anything like you've seen him to be or you've discovered him to be. The God that I've discovered in my life, this imperfect God that I am, is that he said that I came that you might have life and you might have it abundantly. And the best way I know how to translate that is I came that you might have so much life that it would spill onto other people. You got so much of it in you. And so whether you're employed or unemployed, doesn't make any difference. He wants you to have life. So let me pray for you. And I thank you guys for listening so well this morning. I hope it's been beneficial. God, thank you for these men and women. I pray that they will love those who are on the journey really well. At the end of it, they'll be closer together, not further apart. I pray for their families and their friends. God, I pray that it would be a journey that causes them to not only find a job, but to continue to grow. God, help me to grow today and to listen to every opportunity that I have to know you better and to love those in my life. God, be with these men and women. Bless them. In your name I pray. Amen.
Amen. Gary, before you leave, hang on. We're not through with you.
Okay, cool.
Okay. You talked about Entitled, which I got to tell you, if it didn't hit home to you all, you just hit me right between the eyes, and I appreciate that. How do you deal with it? I mean, we talked about the issue of entitled, being entitled and how you work through it. And how do we deal with it? What's the best way?
For me, I give permission to those in my life to speak to it. I have a lot more perspective on you than I do me. And so I have to give people permission. Those who are growing and who are maturing, and if it's a commitment of your life to really do this well, I have to turn to my wife and say, hey, when it looks like entitlement, I need you to tell me. And I want to tell you, I'm not going to be defensive about that. Just say, hey, Gary, do you really need to disappear for this afternoon? And I have some old patterns of anger. My kids helped me more than anything because they would come and say, Dad, you don't have to be so mad. I go, I'm not being mad. I'm being normal. And Kimberly would say, it sounds like you're angry. And so, you know, I can either be the most right guy in the room and live with everybody that's lost the argument. That's never fun. Or I can really be I can be really teachable and open and humble. And so I've turned to my wife primarily and just said, hey, if you're single, turn to those who are in your world and say, hey, when it seems like I'm checking out, here's what entitlement looks like. When it seems like I'm using something to bring life that can't bring life, like alcohol, relationships, when it seems like I'm sleeping too much, when it seems like I'm checking out, I'm shutting down, I want to give you permission to speak the truth to me. And all you got to do is say, hey, and here's what I say to couples all the time. A great way to bring that up is to ask questions and not make statements. My wife is a master at this. She always say, hey, Gary, do you really need to be alone? And she doesn't say, do you really need to be alone? But she says, do you really need to be alone? Or are you depressed? And you're checking out. I said, that's a great question. I'm going to go over here and think about it. I'm drinking a couple of them, got a six-pack, and I'll be back in about an hour.
I'll get back with you on
but
that.
But give people permission is the principal method of doing that. And then I also have a group of men that I run with that I hang out with. You know, I know y'all have battle teams. They might not be your battle team here, but there are guys in your life that love you and say, hey, one of the great ways you can love me is not to enable me. And if you see this, I'm asking you to speak to me about it. And I really want to do this really well. So if you see me shutting down and... there was something I was going to share. Yeah, do I have 5 minutes?
Absolutely.
This, whether you're going through divorce, job, career, any kind of change in your life, my number one strategy for that is to become single task oriented. Now, here's what I mean by that. When I worked with young moms, I'd always say, hey, look, here's the deal. Break your day into three pieces: morning, afternoon, night. And that sounds so elementary, but it pays huge dividends. And so what I'd say is, hey, you may not feel you're most functional at this time, but break your day into three segments. And so I know right now you're going through a divorce, and that's debilitating. I've got a gal in my office who's just, her husband died this last year. And with permission, I share this. Hey, Ann, let's worry about the morning. Okay, that's all we're worried about. What are the two things that you're going to do this morning that you know you need to do, they've got to get done, and everything else is on the B level, and you may get to them, you may not. So, 9 to noon, that's all she's worried about, those two things, okay? 1:30 to 5, she's going to do these two things, and she makes that list every morning. Hey, I'm going to call this person, I'm going to do these, whatever the task is, here's the most, and then, nighttime is just as important. That you plan your values. I'm going to go for a walk with my wife. I'm going to ask her about her day. That may need to be a goal. I'm going to ask her about her instead of me. We're going to have a date this week. So I'm going to write those things down. But at the end of the day, I've got six things I've done that are the priorities of my life. The priorities get in there first. Here's the other piece of that. I'm a little crazy, and it makes me nuts when people say, hey, you can't be sad. Don't be anxious. Well, I am anxious. And some of the things I'm anxious is the reason I'm anxious about them is because I need to do something about them, and my anxiousness will go away when I do something about them. So if I always give myself permission to be crazy for short periods. And so what I mean is, so like with Ann, she's going through a really sad time. I can't say, hey, it's going to be okay. I do say that, but I said, you're going to be sad. So let's get through lunch, but from 12 to 1, if you want to go out and sit on a rock and have a hamburger and cry for an hour, it's okay. It's okay. If you want to be down about, you want to be mad for an hour, but if I tell you you can't do it, it's almost like going, okay, I end up being sad all day long. It's just the way it works for me. I may be doing this just for me, I don't know. But I give periods for you to sit back and to plug in. Hey, I need to be crazy. My son came over one day and said, hey, I just need to vent for a little bit. I said, great, do you need me to be here? He says, yeah, I don't want you to give me any advice. I don't want you to feel guilty about not fixing me. So he just kind of told me why the world sucked. And I listened. I said, great. You feel better? He goes, not really, but I got it off my chest. So I said, great. So and I have that. And so there are times, and so he was smart. He told me what he needed. He just needed me to listen. But you need to give yourself permission to be frustrated about the guy you used to work for that didn't get you, whatever, whatever it is in your life. But have morning, afternoon, night. But make sure, if you go through a day and you can't tell me the two things you did morning, afternoon, and night, it's probably a day wasted just feeling all day. And that's never good.
That's a great point. The other thing that I love that you said was about embrace this time. And again, I pose the question to everybody here. The thing y'all need to know is you're going to land. You're going to find a job, and the way the market is moving, it's going to happen sooner than later. And again, we've got the numbers. We can go back and look at February and see that 20 people landed in the month of February. Well, at the rate we're going, this entire room is going to be empty in less than 4 months. That's great news. So in the meantime, what are you doing to embrace this time? Mm-hmm. And Gary's talked about it. I've heard stories from each one of you all about the time you're getting to spend with family, the time you're getting to spend with friends, the things you're doing that you wouldn't do otherwise.
Right.
And like Gary's saying, give yourself the permission to do that. Don't feel like I've got to be doing this job search all day, every day, and I can't allow myself to have any fun. Give yourself permission to do it.
Yeah. No, that's true. And the whole adventure thing is, I never will. There was a plum job right as I was getting out of graduate school that came up, and I knew that my name was in the hat. I knew it had been hand-delivered by a really great guy who had real influence, and the folks never even called me. And it rocked my world for about a couple of weeks. I was like going, dang. And then it wasn't... 4 weeks after that I got the call of all calls. I was like going, and I remember when the call came, I was like going, man, I didn't even know that was even available. And I literally looked at my wife and said, thank God those people never called me. Because if I'd been there, I would have had to explain why I'm leaving a job I've been at 4 days. and that wouldn't have played well. And so part of that adventure is there is a little risk in this adventure. You hear about this opportunity and you know so-and-so and you think, this is it, I'm getting ready. And how many times do you turn that corner and you know the drill more than I do? And you go, it's not there. Or they've already hired you. Well, they're going to wait. They're going to put it off. And you go, and here you go, start plummeting. You know, I'm falling and there's no carabiner attached to the ridge. You know, and so the adventure is to realize it's a journey, and that one, quote, what seems like a setback is just a part of the story. Don't let it rock your world. Realize there's another job out there, and it may be better for you. But don't let that, that's the adventure part of it, is every day you're climbing up and seeing where you're going to land.
Absolutely. Okay, one last thing.
Yeah.
Would you update us on Murphy? And for y'all, some of y'all remember Murphy because he came through here last summer.
Yeah.
And he has since landed. So if you'll give us an update on
Well, he landed and got a job, and it kind of gravitated into being more accounting than more customer connection kind of stuff. He has kind of a social services background, and so basically he came, his employer, and he, a great guy he went to work for, and came back and just said, Murphy actually went to him and just said, hey, this is not a great fit. I can stay here as long as you need me, but you're paying me. So it's not that it's not meeting my needs. I don't feel like I'm meeting your needs well because there's no illusion. I'm not really an accounting guy. So they came to an agreement, and he's back on the market again and loving his wife well and out there trying to figure it out. But
wow.
And in the meantime, he's slinging coffee across the street, so stop by. He's the short guy with the beard.
And great story about Murphy. I mean, to hear that he had the integrity to go and say, hey, this isn't working.
And the boss was great, too, because the boss came back and just said, dude, I think you're great. And paid for some testing out of their pocket and said, we want to help you get to the next place because we believe in you. And so, you know, it's always great to get that confirmation kind of testing that reminds you of what your gifts are, because we forget. That's another great thing that people can do, is to tell you that whole letting go of stuff, is let people be honest enough to tell you what you're really good at. And I didn't tell the story this morning, but I had a really great church come to me right before I came to Watermark and asked me to be the pastor. And so in church world, that's the CEO. So I nearly took the job. It would have been disastrous. I would have lasted about 4 weeks. Just the skill sets and everything else. And I'm so thankful that guys in my life that said, dude, you don't want to do that. That is not your bent. And not long after that, I was driving around on my day off, and Todd Wagner called me and said, hey, would you meet with us? And I thought, man, thank God I am not the CEO of a church that I'm destroying.
So it's happened twice in your life.
Yes.
It's come along.
I made a career out of it.
Gary, thank you.
Thank you, man. And I want you to know that Watermark loves you guys. We have this ministry not because we have empty tables that need to be used. We love you guys, and we do this because you matter to God and you matter to us. Okay?
Thank you. Thank you, Gary.